Welcome to the Hannah Miller Show. And here she is, Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian, this is Hannah Miller, and this is what happened this week. So in the Miller household, there was a giant storm that came through. We lost our power for about a day, and then we lost our internet for another day or two. And everything around us also lost the internet. And then my husband got the flu with a couple of the kids. So it's been a little bit of a chaotic week here at the Miller house. But we have survived, and we are thriving, and we have bounced back. Thankfully, I think the little flu that we got was, or that the kids and my husband got, was pretty short-lived. So hoping, knock on wood, that's the end of it, and we're able to proceed as normal. And of course, our internet and power are back online, and that's all good. But boy, everything comes to a screeching halt when that happens. Isn't that true? So I'm going to talk about two things this week. We're going to talk about the U.S. House, and we're going to talk about South Carolina House. So first story, let's talk about House Speaker Mike Johnson and this bill. So on Sunday, House Speaker Mike Johnson, along with Senate leaders, announced a new $1.59 trillion spending bill. And in the end, I think it's going to be closer to like $1.65, something like that. We'll just have to see, I guess. But they passed it in order to avoid a looming government shutdown. Dun, dun, dun. Contrary to everything House GOP firebrands have been promising, the measure does nothing to address the ongoing chaos on the southern border. Nothing. We're sending billions to Ukraine, billions to Israel, and we're sending millions and billions to the southern border to process illegal immigrants and to help on that side of things, but we're not doing anything to put a stopgap in place to prevent more of the same thing. We're just funding the crisis instead of putting a stop to the crisis. And so, but why? Why would they, you know, and of course, like I said, they're, quote, avoiding a government shutdown. But one of the things that they're saying and that we hear so often is we can't do anything if the Senate won't work with us. This bill is dead on arrival. And they say that, and they say, well, we can't pass this bill here in the House because it's dead on arrival when it gets to the Senate. Since when has it ever been relevant at all on whether or not somebody else does the right thing when it comes to you deciding to do the right thing? It's like, well, you know, we can't do the right thing because they're going to do the wrong thing. That's bizarre. This is not how morality and ethics and politics is really supposed to be played, supposed to be done. You say, we're going to do the right thing, which is passing this bill, and leave it up to you guys and between your constituents and the Lord on whether or not you do the right thing. And, you know, Chip Roy is correct when he says that the House controls the purse strings. All they have to say is, we're not going to pass this funding bill until we get what we want. Full stop. Period. That's it. You guys don't want to play ball? Okay, we won't play ball. This is how you know, and everybody calls them, you know, says they don't want to negotiate and the Republicans won't compromise. And, you know, they lob all these terrible terms at the Republicans when politics is about bargaining and leverage, negotiating. And this is how the checks and balances are supposed to work, where the House says, well, okay, Senate, we need you to do something. We need you to move on this. We control the purse strings. If you don't move on this, well, we're not going to move with the purse strings. That's how, and bartering, how this sausage is made. And it's kind of ugly, it seems. But the reality is that's how everything operates. You know, when I go to the market, and if I want, you know, a dozen eggs, and I want to barter for those and say, okay, well, I've got some leverage, and which is my dollar. How much can you give me for this amount? I know you want to sell something. And so you go back and forth and you barter that way and you use your leverage. And they know that I want eggs, but I know that they want money. That's how you work. And it's not a bad thing. And we wouldn't say that that's a bad thing to have how the market works in that way. So why is it suddenly a bad thing when that's how the federal government operates? Congress operates. It's not a bad thing. That's so how it's supposed to work. But of course, people are horrified by the prospect of a government shutdown, totally forgetting, as Steve Bias reminded listeners in a recent podcast with Paul Dragoo, that the government used to shut down all the time. After accomplishing the legislation they needed to, they went home, and the government was, in effect, shut down. Now we view the government, also in the words of Steve Bias, as a permanently operating corporation that never shuts down. And bureaucrats have pumped people full of fear at the prospect of government shutdown so effectively that we have hamstrung our leverage. We just took our leverage and we threw it out the window. And so we have nothing with which to demand that the Senate come to the table. We have nothing. And so we have hamstrung ourselves because we've been terrified by bureaucrats, by the media, because they know how it works, and they play the long game there. So is Mike Johnson any better than McCarthy? Well, despite all the MAGA Jr. rhetoric and the pumping up of his conservative family image, when it gets down to it, his voting record was only slightly better than McCarthy, who is typically in the mid-70% as far as the constitutionality of his voting was concerned. Johnson was similar, usually in the low 80s. So about 82% of the time, he voted alongside of the Constitution and how he should have been. So it was no Jim Jordan, who has a superb constitutional vote record. And I think, I can't remember, when this was all happening, I remember pulling up his voting record and putting it in show notes to talk about, but then something else happened that week, and I can't remember whether or not I actually addressed it and shared it with you guys. But you can go, there's a Liberty Index, and you can get on the New American website and find the index for, the Freedom Index there as well. So there's a Liberty Index with somewhere else, I think Conservative Review, and then Freedom Index at the New American, both those places you can go to. But Johnson, you know, like I said, he's no Jim Jordan. He's just another nice guy, okay? And he's not going to cause any political waves. And Steve Bias was right again in this interview when he said that he's just another nice guy who can be counted on to fold when it matters most. And while Johnson may not be a swamp rat, maybe he's just easily manipulated or just naive, as Paul Dragoo said in that interview, the end is still the same. Whatever motivated Mike Johnson, the end is still the same. The United States citizens are sold down the river. And we're going to send billions of dollars to folks overseas. Not to make light of their situations, but first things first. And that really should be our perspective about a lot of things. First things first. The southern border, before we start sending money to help process all the illegal immigrants, we need to put a stop to the flood of illegal immigrants and then help process who's here illegally, who's not, and all this other jazz. And then first things first when it comes to sending illegal aid. You know what? Address what's here first. And then maybe we can help some other people. Put things in order in your own house first, and then maybe. And it's like we've totally forgotten where our priorities should be, what things are most important, and what the first things should be. All right, so South Carolina House. For those who haven't heard, the moderate establishment kicked out the 16 most conservative members of the Republican caucus last year. We talked about it some last year, but this is just a brief reminder, including my representative, Josiah Magnuson. And they kicked him out for refusing to sign a loyalty pledge. Remember, does this ring a bell for anybody? The loyalty pledge, if you remember, sought to silence true conservatives in the South Carolina Freedom Caucus by making them promise not to post photos of the public voting board, making them promise not to endorse more conservative challengers. So if a Republican in South Carolina in the South Carolina House had a challenger who was more conservative, these representatives were being told that you could not endorse the more conservative candidate. That was a challenger to somebody who's already in office. And then they could not inform South Carolina citizens about how Republican members of the House break their campaign promises and stop good bills. So basically, it was all, we don't want transparency. We don't want anybody out there, our constituents, to actually know what we're doing here. Even though the public voting board is a public voting board. It is for people to know how their representatives are voting. And they did not want that shared. And they were telling them, you can't take pictures of it and share it with people. Now we're back in session, and you may have heard people already talking about a Pelosi-style bill. This new bill here in South Carolina is similar to the way Congress operated under Nancy Pelosi, where, and that's why they're calling it a Pelosi-style bill, where only a handful of selected amendments were allowed to be heard, effectively preventing debate and silencing conservatives. Now, as of this recording, House leadership was forced to temporarily abandon their attempt to rewrite House rules. So this has been abandoned as of this moment. For now, these rules fly in the face of an open and transparent institution. According to the Freedom Caucus, grassroots activists from across the state contacted their legislators and told them to vote no to these rules. And the pressure worked. And the new rules were temporarily halted, or have been temporarily halted, while leadership explores other options. So if you haven't yet, if you haven't contacted your representative, it's not too late. Please continue to advocate on these issues and tell your representative to vote against rule changes that prevent representatives from faithfully representing constituents. That was a lot of representative, but I hope you understand what I mean. Continue to reach out and let them know, because like I said, it's been tabled for now. It's been abandoned for now, but they are exploring other options, their words. So to basically, I'm sure, get what they want. So I would encourage you to advocate for transparency in the House. So, and I want to acknowledge the only courageous no vote that was passed by a House leadership member, and that was from Representative Kathy Landing of Mount Pleasant. She was the only one in House leadership who said, no, I'm not going to vote to pass this. We can't do this. And so I appreciate that. I respect that. And she deserves accolades for that. And so Josiah Magnuson, my representative, he explained this a little bit more. And so I'm going to just, I'll explain it a little bit and then make a few points here at the end. So he said that the new rules would eliminate the motion period, which is the one portion of the daily calendar when an individual legislator can ask the full House to bring his bill out of committee if it's being ignored and get a vote. That's something the establishment has always hated, according to Josiah, because they want to be in control of all bills, and they want to keep South Carolinians in the dark on issues where they know they represent their big donors rather than defending our constitutional rights. The motion period is used only rarely, but it is a needed backstop, and Josiah considers it an important tool to shine a light and get legislators on the record when other procedures fail. Do you hear that? This is something that can be used to get a vote, to get people basically on paper regarding a bill that otherwise they would like to just see go away. They don't want their constituents to see them vote on this because they've got big donors breathing down their neck on it. They either don't want their big donors to see how they vote on it, or they don't want their constituents to see how they vote on it. And so this is a measure that can push them, and it's just a way to bring transparency and light to things that are going on. And I don't know about you, but I always feel like we could always use a little more transparency in how the sausage is made in South Carolina politics, especially. So the new rules would also consolidate power with the majority and minority leaders, which is currently Davey Hyatt, who wrote the loyalty pledge that got 16 of these guys and gals kicked out last year, and Todd Rutherford, who recently got, according to Josiah, a dangerous killer illegally released early from prison. Now, I don't know, you know, much about that, but I trust Josiah, and I would trust him to be accurate and know the truth of that. But anyway, really for me, I mean, Todd Rutherford is a Democrat. That is unsurprising. But for me, Davy Hyatt, what are you doing? And the whole thing with last summer and the Freedom Caucus and the loyalty pledge that he wrote up and then this leadership is abominable. It really and truly is. And he needs to be out. He needs to be done. Because this is reprehensible and this is not how we want politics to be done in South Carolina. Now, during the cloture period, when more controversial bills are being debated, the rule that they wanted to pass would allow these two politicians to each hand select up to 12 amendments to be discussed, including an additional 2 amendments they would be allowed to personally introduce for a total of 14 amendments. And the rest of the amendments in the hopper would just be tossed out, as Josiah said. And then they would also control who could speak for or against the bill itself. Did you hear that? So the cloture period could be entered by a majority plus 5 vote after as few as 9 legislators speak on a bill out of the 124 legislators in the House. And the establishment will easily be able to line up their people to speak first and box out the opinions they don't want to hear. Is this really how we want politics to be run in South Carolina? If this rule passes, millions of South Carolinians will have their voices stripped. The entire legislative process would be controlled by 3 people: the Speaker of the House, the Majority Leader, and the Minority Leader. And it's not just Freedom Caucus districts that are affected. This rule change reduces the power of every individual legislator to participate in the process. And I just want to thank Josiah for writing up all of that so well and explaining that so well. I got that in an email this morning, and then he had shared it on social media as well. So just credit where credit is due. But anyway, I think last comments on this. I think this all means 2 things. 1, Davy Hyatt and the Republican House leadership genuinely are trying to stop real conservative movement. And they do want to centralize power in Columbia. I don't care what the arguments were last year, you know, because I heard them. I heard the arguments for why the Freedom Caucus was in the wrong, why they needed to sign the loyalty pledge, this crazy pledge. I heard the arguments. I know that why they were all saying that they were in the wrong. Now, you know, common sense to me seems to be pretty obvious why we don't want that pledge to be, why that pledge is not a good idea. I don't think it really took a whole lot of smarts to be able to wrap our minds around why that was a bad idea, despite all of the rhetoric and all of the political ease language that got thrown around about it. Davy Hyatt's in the wrong. Republican House leadership is in the wrong. And they really are against conservatism in South Carolina. I don't think there's any question about it now, despite whatever their arguments were last year. And 2, the liberals and rhinos put this up because they're scared. They were trying to stop things from moving forward, especially because it's an election year. And they know that, you know, during an election year, things move. And people want to be able to go back to their constituents and be able to say, look what I got done. We actually got things done this year. And so they're worried. And that means that we're doing something right. And as Josiah put in his letter to his constituents, it's a long game, but we are winning. Slowly but surely, South Carolina is moving toward real conservative reform. And I think that that is true. And I think that it is a long game, but it is happening slowly but surely. And just as a reminder, politics is supposed to be a long game. Our legislative process was not designed to move quickly. It wasn't. We just live in a 24/7, dopamine-driven, fast-paced time period that has little political foresight and even less patience. But we have to remind ourselves, you know what? It's supposed to operate this way. And it's kind of a good thing because the slower they move, the less they're able to destroy, because by and large, they just doing bad things that are not good for us as South Carolina citizens, nor for United States citizens when it comes to Washington, D.C. and what's going on there. All right. Hope you have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Hannah Miller Show. Please remember to subscribe to this podcast. This podcast is produced by Bob Sloan Audio Productions. If you'd like to find out more about Hannah or to schedule her for a speaking event, go to her website, thehannahmillershow.com.